Ace Podcast.
This podcast is part of the Dark Myths Collective. Visit darkmyths.org to discover more shows like this one. The darkness awaits.
Guys, before we start the show today, Jason and I just want to thank you. I mean, from the bottom of my heart, and I think from the bottom of what he has left of his heart.
The gaping darkness that my heart used to be.
The gaping darkness in his soul. We want to thank you. We had the most incredible month. And I try not to talk too much about the numbers. Everybody knows that's a load of crap, though, because that's all I do.
It's exciting for us. It really, really is.
I feel like some people think I'm bragging. I'm not. I promise. I'd never want to put anybody down or anything like that. I'm saying this because I am so proud of you, every single one of you who are listening to this. So let me tell you, we ended July. We switched hosting platforms in the middle. There was some craziness. It was all crazy and weird. But we ended July with 110,479 downloads.
That's wild.
That's insane.
When are you going to tell me about the click farm?
Probably in a few days.
Okay,
a few days, and then we'll get to it.
Let all this wear off. I'm gonna kind of stop you real quick.
No, you're fine.
I'm just so glad that we are entertaining.
Yeah.
To some extent, and I'm so glad that week after week we have a community of great people.
Yeah.
That not only listen to us, but also share and comment and connect with us online as well through our social media platforms.
Yeah.
You guys are what make us not alone.
Exactly. You are what keep us from being alone. Thank you, Jason. That was perfect. By our estimates, there's about 12,000 of you.
What?
What? That just
like I got 12,000 new friends.
There are about 12,000 people at least who listen to the show, or at least have tried the show. They may not have all stuck around.
That's fair. You know, I think that's amazing because I remember the first few weeks it was your family members.
Yeah, which I have a big family.
That was still great. Yeah. But now to see in just a short amount of time, mm-hmm. how many more people have become a part of our team, essentially.
Yeah. And in addition to the numbers, we got like, I want to say 10, 15 new patrons last month, something crazy like that. We got like 30 new reviews on iTunes. Yeah, it's crazy. We're up to 450 followers on Twitter. Like, I know these numbers may not sound a lot to like Dan Carlin and Astonishing Legends, but they are huge to us. And it's more than we ever thought. And Jason really hit the nail on the head with it a minute ago. It's the fact that when I post, whether it's show related things or like my dog, or like yesterday I talked about how I fell asleep at work for a second, like people.
Dude, professional.
I know, right? People reply, they comment, they like, they share. And it just makes me feel loved and appreciated. And even if you never leave an iTunes review, you never donate to Patreon, never even say anything on social media, the fact that you're listening
and enjoying us
is all we can ask for.
So of course we do celebrate the numbers, but really we celebrate you guys.
Right.
You're what keep us doing this.
Exactly.
Keep us doing this. Yes. I said that, right?
It literally is. Ever since today is August 1st that we're recording. Ever since yesterday, I'm thinking about us doing this in 5 years, 10 years, and it's not like that'll never happen. Like it is, we're here and we're just getting started. So guys, thank you so much. And without further ado, let's get on to the show.
Hello and welcome to Not Alone Podcast. I'm Jason Moitoso.
And I'm Sam Fredrickson. And tonight we are going to have the resurgence, the comeback of our Tales of episode series.
Sam, what you talking about?
Well, I don't know if you remember. You should remember because you were there. I don't know if our listeners remember. But a few months ago, we did Tales of Time Slips.
Ooh.
Yep, we essentially did it to where instead of really tearing into it, finding 100 sources and cross-checking everything, we're really just going to tell you some cool stories.
What we're actually going to be talking about today is reincarnation. Before we dive into our stories,
yes,
I kind of want to give us a little bit more background, a little bit more...
Context?
Context, yeah, that's better.
There you go.
Thank you. Thank you, Sam. About reincarnation and kind of what it meant probably to our ancestors and how it probably developed. And I think in a lot of ways, how it really came down and how it developed into a full belief system is because for us today, when we think of cycles,
right,
probably the only thing that we really think of are generally our days, our weeks, years, and seasons. When the next time, you know, pumpkin spice is going to be at Starbucks. That's the cycle we think of. We don't...
2 months, everybody.
We don't necessarily, for most of us at least, don't care about agricultural cycles, life and birth, things right. of that nature. Not at least at this point, not in our civilization.
Well, even the cycles that we observe on the daily, like the cycle of the sun, especially the cycle of the moon, we know that our time is governed by it, but we don't pay any attention to the
right.
actual moon.
Like, I don't know what stage the moon is in right now. Do you?
I could Google it.
Care about... Yeah, but what I'm getting right. at is that for us, we have kind of left those observations behind, and they don't play like an important factor in our beliefs anymore.
Right.
But if you go back a few millennia, it actually did. It did factor in quite a bit. And there's a lot of ideas that the reincarnation story began and came about due to our ancestors' observations of cycles and agricultural cycles, to be more exact.
All right.
The cycle of seeding, growth, death, reseeding. So some of the earliest documentation of reincarnation actually comes back from Eastern Asia descent in India during the Vedic period,
okay,
which is about 1500 BCE to 1800 BCE.
Okay.
And essentially what it comes down to is the idea that life is not necessarily black and white. It's not right. necessarily you are a good person or a bad person. Where during that time period, there was a belief that there is a heaven or hell, but necessarily you weren't going to be going to either location because, again, there's this gray area.
Right.
And that's really where most people live. And so in order to get to one of those locations, you have to be either more virtuous or have more vices, more sins
right.
than normal, essentially. So without ascending to those levels, our souls essentially just keep cycling back into new bodies and keep going through experiences. And that same kind of ideology also comes into play with the rise of Buddhism and Hinduism at around 800 to 300 BCE in India as well. And though they do have some slight differences between one another, it's relatively the same, and I am making just broad strokes here.
Right, right.
And then this also becomes a part of Taoism and Sikhism at 1500 BCE, or CE. So,
CE, okay.
Which is actually I had no idea how relatively new Sikhism was
yeah.
as a global religion.
That's crazy.
Actually really impressive.
I didn't know that at all.
Yeah. And one thing that I didn't think of is how Europeans also saw reincarnation. Because a lot of times, like I had said, it feels like when we think about reincarnation, we go straight to Buddhism, Hinduism, and that's really where our minds start.
Right. It's a very Eastern concept, yeah.
Right. But there are also tribal religions in Europe as well around the time of Christ. The Gaul was actually a pretty prominent one, and so were Celtic religions up in the Britain Isles as well, which theirs was pretty interesting because it wasn't necessarily this whole becoming a better person or a more evil soul. There wasn't
right.
the whole system of karma. Really, what it was a kind of continuation of one's soul until you essentially defeated all of death's terrors,
right.
all of the fears that are associated with that, and you ascend to becoming all like this ultimate form of courage and warrior spirit.
I dig that.
Which is super cool, right? But if we take it back a step as well, ancient Greek culture also showed signs of reincarnation. There was actually a religion about 600 BCE that was centered around that ideology as well. And Plato actually stated he's been credited a lot with the Mediterranean culture
right.
of bringing the ideas of reincarnation to light, which is right. actually kind of cool.
I don't know if it was Plato who cataloged it, but you think about the Greeks and the way that their afterlife differed from the traditional view is that you didn't have like heaven or hell, good or bad. You just had the underworld.
Right.
And the underworld encompassed everything. And what people think a lot of times is that the valiant warriors, and especially the demigods, would go to the section of the underworld called the Elysian Fields, and they would stay in the Elysian Fields forever, which is just like they can do whatever they want. They can hunt beasts, they can fight, they can do anything. But what it actually is that there is some evidence that there was a step beyond that, and that the Greeks had a sort of system of reincarnation wherein if you went to Tartarus, or you went to, what's the other one? I think it's just called. No, there's a name. You've got Tartarus, which is the closest to hell. Then you have another section, which is just mindless wandering forever. But
like purgatory almost.
Kind of, yeah. They would drink from a river of forgetfulness and then
oh, bummer.
Like, yeah, that was it forever, which sucks. But if you went to the Elysian Fields, you would actually prove yourself not just that one time, but if you'd have to do it 3 times. And if you made it to the Elysian Fields each time, then you ascended to these islands that was it forever.
It was essentially immortality.
Yeah, immortality and a good, joyful, mm-hmm. peaceful immortality.
Yeah, and a lot of the reincarnation tales are of an ascension to an ideal form.
Right.
Which is actually the one thing that they really have in common. Because when we look at Western ideas of reincarnation, they tend to stick within the confines of you are going to become another human.
Right.
While in Hinduism, we also see that there's a possibility that your spirit's going to essentially reincarnate into the form of an animal.
Right.
Or vegetation as well, possibly. Mm-hmm. So you got a little bit more connection to nature through theirs rather than just sticking between being human.
Right. And especially when you look at something like Buddhism, where you're going through this cycle and most people, I'm sure, go through it in that lens thousands upon thousands of time to become the Buddha, essentially. The all at once, you're in nirvana, you're just like that.
True enlightenment.
True enlightenment. Yeah.
Which is kind of similar to Sikhism, because once they hit essentially their enlightenment status, they become absorbed by their God.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, which I thought was
so dope.
Yeah, it's kind of cool.
That is so dope.
These reincarnation stories have also influenced other religions as well, including mm-hmm. monotheistic religions, in different stories and different forms. Most notably, Judaism mm-hmm. actually has a few stories about them as well. And even though, as of right now, we're essentially talking about the ancient world, we're talking about the Mediterranean, all the way up to, you know, Britain, and then the East as well, into Asia and India. But you can find tales of reincarnation in a lot of other locations as well. Mm-hmm. South American culture does have quite a few as well, as far as Australian and Siberian culture. And I think what it comes down to is again, more of a connection to right. nature and a attunement with its natural cycles.
Yeah. I dig that.
Anyway, so that's a little bit of a backstory, cool. You know, maybe a little bit more to think about. But now we'll get into our fun little stories here and we'll start off with, I think, the worst one.
Fun little stories. It is really it's sad.
Sam, tell me what you found today.
Yeah, well, thank you for that. Yeah, so we're going to go ahead. I've got two stories I'm going to tell you. I think Jason's got one. He doesn't like this one, and rightfully so. The two that I'm covering are two of the most well-known reincarnation tales, and for good reason. They're very interesting. The first one that we're going to do is one of the Pollock twins. Now, this focuses on the family of John and Florence Pollock, who had two daughters. One was Jacqueline, and one was Joanna. Jacqueline was 6, Joanna was 11. Now, on May 5th, 1957, the family, as well as one of the friends of one of the girls...
Wait a second. It's the Pollock twins, but they're 6 and 11?
Dude, you just listen to me here.
Okay, I just...
Give me a second.
Okay.
Here. I know.
I'm sorry. I'm sorry. Good. Couldn't send you.
You're all right. So on May 5th, 1957, the family of John, Florence, Jacqueline, Joanna, as well as one of the girl's friends, a little boy named Anthony Layden, were walking to church. Now, suddenly, a driver going down the road lost control of his vehicle. He swerved and he hit all three of the children, killing them instantly.
Goodness. Okay.
Yeah. Unbelievably tragic and traumatic. I mean, just to have to bury both of your kids at the same time when they're so young, it's unbelievably horrible. So they, you know, they mourn. I'm sure it's one of those things where you just never are truly over it. But once the mourning had lifted and they were able to focus more on the future, focus back on their life, they actually decided, you know what, I want us to have more kids, is what they were thinking. And they were praying for this and really hoping for it. And happily, about a year later in 1958, Florence got pregnant. Now, around this time, John, and he doesn't state how he knows this, but John starts saying these things he knows. For instance, he knows that the child within her is actually two children. It's twins. And he knows that they're the reincarnated form of their daughters who they lost, which is very strange because John was a devout Catholic and Catholicism and reincarnation don't mix.
They don't mix.
They're not,
no.
It's not like there's, and there's always room in religion for interpretation, but.
And I think one of the major reasons why it doesn't mix is because, just like I had said, Gaul, which is just north of Italy, they were a pagan religion, and their druids are who actually believed and preached essentially reincarnation.
Right.
So it makes a lot of sense for Catholicism to essentially completely oust that because it is a part of the pagan mythos in Europe.
Right, but even beyond that, I mean, just I would say out of the majority of religions, Christianity is one of the least compatible with reincarnation because the Christian people know what's going on. You die, you get resurrected, you have heaven, that's it. That's the entirety of the plan. And so it's not really something, it doesn't have that much room for interpretation. Regardless of all of that, John still kept saying that. Even when people are like, what are you talking about? That's some, I hate to say it, but some heathen stuff is what they probably would have called it. But John, even though that didn't mesh with his religion, still could not be dissuaded from believing that and telling Florence that. The doctor that they went to said, dude, she's pregnant with one kid. I'm a doctor. Like, believe me on this. And John was like, no,
they're twins.
Well,
this was when? 58?
Yeah. That's kind of what I was thinking, too. Anyway, so the doctor says it's one child, it's fine. Now, on the 4th of October, 1958, Florence is giving birth, and she gives birth to one little girl. And then the doctor's like, oh, wait a second here. There's another one. And it's like, oh, gosh.
They had to call an audible like we did today.
Yeah, exactly. And so she gives birth now to a second child. And the children are named Jillian and Jennifer. And they are identical twins.
And I'm sure that just solidifies John's beliefs.
Oh, yeah, because first off, the fact that he was right, for him to have told the doctor this, the doctor completely refutes him, and then to be right, that's something spooky. That's, like, eerie. But the very first thing that happens is that John holds Jennifer, and across the top of her forehead is this thin white line, which was the exact same length and positioning as a scar that Jacqueline, one of the sisters who had died, had gotten from a bicycle accident. And then he checks her leg, and on her leg, just on Jennifer, not on Jillian, just on Jennifer's leg, he finds a birthmark that was in the same size and the exact same position as Jacqueline. Pretty spooky, but it doesn't even end there. Now, the couple decided to move from their hometown of Hexham, which is where the twins were born, the last girls were born and died, where they'd lived their whole lives, to a place called Whitley Bay. And this happened when the twins were just a few months old. However, around 3 years later, right before the twins turned four, the couple, the whole family actually, was driving back through Hexham, and suddenly the twins start pointing out landmarks around town and talking about the memories they had there. When they drove past the school, the girls just went crazy, and they were like, "That's our school! That's our school!" And the parents like, no, that's not your school. And they're like, "We went there. What do you mean that's not our school? That's where we went to school." And the parents at this point hadn't even told the twins about their sisters. They didn't know they had sisters who had died, because that's probably not something you tell a three-year-old. They'd be really sad. So that's just, it's just a little weird. The other thing that happened, and this is the reason that, so this is the part of the story that Jason really doesn't like. Essentially, around this time, Florence would notice that Jillian and Jennifer were playing this weird game. And what they would do is they would lay on the floor completely motionless, and Jennifer would put her head on Jillian, and then Jillian would say, "There's blood coming out of your eyes. There's blood coming out of your eyes."
Oh my God, this is so awful.
"That's where you got hit by the car. There's blood coming out of your eyes." And Florence was like, "Oh,
that's a game?
Gosh, it's a terrible game."
That is horrible.
Kids say the darndest things.
Don't they? They see dead people and whatnot.
So Florence also grabbed a box of toys that Jacqueline and Joanna had played with before they were killed. And she gave these toys to the twins, and essentially they would grab like a bear and they would say, "Look, it's Mr. Stuffikins." And that was exactly what their older sisters had called the bear. They'd grab a doll. "Look, it's Miss Susie." That's exactly what, but they never know. They never knew. They had no idea. Like I said, they didn't even know they had sisters, much less what their sisters called their toys. It's just eerie. It's just weird.
I think it is really interesting, though, that it seems like children are always kind of more the conduit for paranormal activity.
Right.
You know, I feel like they're more connected to it than as we grow older.
Right.
In a lot of ways.
There's this kind of belief. We'll get back to that. There's just one last thing to say about the Pollock twins anyway. But there's this kind of belief that children and the faith that I was raised in especially believe this, that there's a veil between this world and the spirit world, and that as children grow up, or when children are born, that veil between this world and the spirit world is extremely, extremely thin, and it's easy to see through, and it's easy to communicate with. That's why you have stories of, like, I guarantee you, everybody knows somebody who has a story about their kid talking to a ghost. It's just, it's inevitable. And it's that because they're so young, for whatever reason, whether it's that we are spiritual beings, it calms them to be closer to the spirit world, whereas as an adult, it would freak them out, you know, anything like that. But it is, it's always kids. And the other thing about it is, and it happened here as well, when these kids reach the age of 5 or 6, it's just gone.
It's turned off.
Yeah,
it's like a flip of the switch.
They can be talking about their past life in detail the day before, and then the next day it's over. And they can't even remember if you ask them. The last thing to note about the Pollock twins is that they one day were walking past a parked car, and suddenly, out of nowhere, the car was on, its engine was turning over, but it hadn't started moving yet. And they just freaked out and started screaming and saying, like, "The car is coming for us. It's coming for us again." And just talking exactly like they had been hit by a car once. I mean, that's the story of the Pollock twins. It could be. The difference between this story and the next story that I'm going to tell is that this one could be a lot of coincidences.
It could be.
Even
you,
things
do you think
like
unintentional, like, projection of facts were actually given to them.
Right, because what this focuses on is a grieving couple with new children. Even if they don't remember talking about the original kids, they may have.
Right.
Or just, subconsciously did something a certain way. From there, it's not completely and totally unnatural for kids to get scared of cars. I mean, like, kids are weird. Kids are freaked out a lot of the time, and that's fine. The biggest thing for me is the physical abnormalities. The thing about, well, first off, the biggest thing is that the dad said they're reincarnated twins when everyone told him, A, that's heresy, and B, it's a single child. But he just stuck to it. But then the other biggest thing is just their physical appearance.
I mean, that could honestly be hearsay.
The dad.
John believing that they're going to be twins.
It could be. It could be. But, I mean,
that could be a fact later fabricated.
Right. But the birthmark was the same, and the birthmark stayed. I don't know if the white line stayed, the scar, but even that birthmark is pretty
It's
weird.
Interesting, and, you know, I think later on in my story as well, we're going to be talking about birthmarks a little bit, and I think it's really interesting to think that a reincarnated soul, because from what I had learned about cultures and their beliefs and some religion to it, it never really stated physical attributes being passed on as well. Just more of literally spiritual energy and knowledge. That's what gets passed. Not, again, the physical characteristics of an individual. And I think it's interesting. That, again, makes this story very interesting. And later, when we go over mine, it'll play a little bit of a role as well. Anyway, so the twins.
I dig. That's the twins.
And I honestly still keep thinking of The Shining. Every time I think of it, Shining, they're laying down on the ground in blood.
Yeah.
So thank you.
You're
Sam.
Welcome.
I appreciate
Enjoy
that.
Enjoy the nightmares.
And then you have another story of a kid as well.
I do. And this is not like the previous story at
all. I like this one a lot.
This one is my favorite.
It's pretty sweet. So
this story, like I just said about the twins, this all, because all of the verification as well comes from the parents. This next story is not circumstantial evidence.
There is a lot of fine detail that is rather convincing.
Yes.
With James.
This is one that has been torn apart. Well, attempted to be torn apart, been looked into by professionals, news reporters, all sorts of things, and it still holds up. So this is the story of James Leininger. He was a boy born on April 10th, 1998. And he was born in the San Francisco Bay Area, but his family soon relocated to Lafayette, Louisiana, which is where James would grow up.
That is a bit of a change.
It is. It definitely is.
It's a huge move.
Now, his strangeness begins in May of 2000 when he was about 2 years old. His mother, Andrea, was just laying in bed, having a nice time, reading, and suddenly she hears him screaming from his room down the hall. She runs over. She runs into his room and she hears him saying, "Airplane crash, plane on fire, little man can't get out." And Andrea rushes in and sees him basically trying to escape, like trying to fight the bed to escape, kicking and clawing and screaming the entire time.
Is this a normal vocabulary for a 2-year-old?
No. Well, maybe. That's
I don't know.
2-year-olds talk a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They don't shut up.
Yeah.
I feel like I'd know
it. None of those words are words that a 2-year-old couldn't know.
Right. That's fair.
That's what
that
it
is fair. To.
So she wakes him up and says, "It's just a nightmare. It's okay. It's okay. Go back to sleep, James." He goes back to sleep, but suddenly this is now a regular occurrence. This thing that had never happened before happens 4 to 5 times a week. And his parents finally start asking him and saying, What's going on in this dream? You're talking about a plane, you're talking about fire." And he tells them that it's a dream, and in the dream he's in an airplane that gets shot down, and then he says the plane is shot down by the Japanese. And his parents, I can't even imagine.
He said Japanese at
the
2?
Japanese, right? This is the vocabulary.
Okay.
That's a little all right weird
that's a little odd.
He says the plane was shot down by the Japanese, and they say, first off, how do you know what a Japanese person is, or where they come from? How do you know what Japan is? Secondly, how do you know that the people who shot you down were Japanese? And he says, on their planes, they have a big red sun.
That is correct. Yep, that is factual.
World War II, Land of the Rising Sun, emblazoned on the planes. Now, he had never really had, I mean, he had the same interest in planes that any kid has, but never super interested in them. Yeah, planes are dope. But never super interested in them, nor, of course, being 2 years old, had he ever studied World War II history. But after the dream started, James was fascinated by World War II aircraft, and he got a lot of toy planes, but he always would only take the ones that had propellers on them. He never wanted a jet plane. He never wanted a modern fighter plane.
That's totally fair. I mean,
oh, yeah.
I wanted propellers. They're, spin them. Exactly.
Yeah. It's like a fidget spinner. It's the OG fidget spinner.
Exactly.
It's a plane propeller.
I don't want no jet fighter. That's silly.
There you go. Now, the weird detail there with his toy planes is he would take them and he'd bang them against the table or against the wall. And he'd,
that's how you destroy your planes, kid.
Well, he'd intentionally break off the propellers of the planes.
Oh.
Mm-hmm. Now, when he was getting into his car seat with his parents in the car, he'd settle in, and then he would take his hands and he'd act like he was putting on headphones and a face mask, like he was a fighter pilot getting ready to go. Over time, he starts to get a lot more specific on the details, and everything I'm going to tell you here takes place by the time he was about 4 years old or younger. Now, he tells his parents that in his dreams, his name is still James, but he's a different James. And he's flying in a plane called a Corsair, and the plane took off from a boat called the Natoma. He also knew some really weirdly specific things about this Corsair, saying it would veer off to the left at takeoff. It had a tendency to blow its tires out when it was landing. Now, one time, he was watching a program on the History Channel. He'd seen a program about World War II airplanes, and he was like, I want to watch that. Again, weird for a kid to do, but in any case, this program is showing footage of the Corsair plane and Japanese planes dogfighting. And the narrator claims that these Japanese planes were Zeros, which is the traditional Japanese fighter plane. But James says, those aren't Zeros, those are Tonys. And the Tony, this is something that I did look up and verify, the Tony is a real plane, and it is a smaller fighter plane than the Zero. They look very similar. The other weirdly specific thing he knew is that in the Air Force, or in the Air Force and the Navy and the military at that time, if it was a Japanese bomber plane, they would give it a female name. They'd refer to it in a female name. And if it was a Japanese fighter plane, they would give it a male name.
Is Zero?
No, not like that.
I was like, gonna say, like, Zero, how does that have a gender?
Like, if you're seeing if they're flying and they see a Japanese bomber headed somewhere, they'll say, there she goes.
Oh.
But if there's a Japanese fighter, they say, there he goes.
Okay.
And he knew this, and that's how he was referring to them as well. Now, he claims that he had shot down a lot of Tonys when he was this other James. His mother once made a remark that before he was even fully potty trained, they took him to the Lone Star Flight Museum. There was a real live Corsair plane there, and without even explaining to his parents what he was doing, he conducted a pre-flight check on the outside of the craft. The tire pressure, the landing gear, all of that.
He's giving it a good inspection.
Just doing these things that a kid should have no idea how to do. Now, his mother was on board with the reincarnation hypothesis at this point. She was like, okay, this is getting weird. This is getting freaky. His father was not, though. He was a devout Christian. He said, it's impossible. There's no such thing as reincarnation. And he actually started fact-checking his child's claims, which is a great thing to do to a three-year-old. When I have a three-year-old, I'm going to be like, are you sure? Are you sure that chocolate milk comes from brown cows, child? Let me fact-check you on that.
Perfect.
Perfect. So the very first thing
that's not what fatherhood's all about, I don't know what will be.
Right. The very first thing he does is he just gets books from the library, looking up especially like registers of U.S. aircraft and aircraft carriers and the like. And he finds that in World War II, there is an aircraft carrier that operated in the Pacific Theater called the Natoma Bay. Now, at another point, Bruce was reading up on the Natoma Bay itself, and gets to a part in this book of basically engagements in the Pacific Ocean, and it brings up Iwo Jima. And James points and says, that's where my plane went down. I went down at Iwo Jima. That's where the nightmares are happening. He wasn't asked, he wasn't prompted. Mm-hmm. And suddenly, Bruce, which is his father's name, Bruce sees in the book that the Natoma was present at Iwo Jima. That's where the planes launched from in Iwo Jima. And he says, all right, I guess there's just one last thing to do. And he actually, it's September 11th, 2002, Bruce travels to a reunion of pilots who had served out of the Natoma Bay. while he was there, he learned that there was only one pilot to die in the invasion of the Battle of Iwo Jima from the Natoma Bay, and his name was James Houston Jr. Now, around this time, little James back home had been signing his pictures, his artwork, with James 3, and it's theorized that James 1 would have been James Houston Sr., James 2 would be James Houston Jr.,
right,
and now we have James 3. The other thing that James had done shortly before his father left is started naming his army men. And there was one of them with black hair. His name was Billy. One of them was blonde, and James named him Leon. And one of them was Ginger, and James named him Walter. And they, I mean, Billy is one that I could see a kid.
Hey, yeah, that's a normal name. That's just that's normal.
Leon's
a little
Walter.
Bit more, on the outside. Yeah. Walter is kind of boring.
Yeah, to the
normal,
best of
guess,
his parents'
yeah.
recollection, they had no idea where he got these names. They had never known somebody named Leon. He had never seen TV or a movie with somebody named Leon. Same thing with Walter. At the reunion, Bruce learns that there were three other pilots as well, not with Iwo Jima, but before Iwo Jima, who were stationed on the Natoma Bay, who had been killed, shot down and killed. Their names were Billy Peeler, who had black hair, Leon Connor, who had blonde hair, and Walter Devlin, who had ginger hair.
That's a little
That's
weird.
A coincidence. That's
a coincidence.
I mean, that's not a coincidence.
It's a little something more than a coincidence.
It's
not proof, but it's weird.
It's, yes.
Good.
Thank you. I agree with that. It is weird. And, yeah, it's just weird.
Now, the other thing that James constantly talked about was his best friend as a pilot, who was a man named Jack Larson.
It's crazy and bizarre.
Now,
and wonderful.
Thank you. Now, little James also claimed that when he was a pilot, he had a best friend who was a pilot named Jack Larson. And at the reunion, Bruce confirmed that Jack Larson was a real person. He and James Houston spent a lot of time together. They were really close, really good friends. The other thing that comes up is that some of the people who watched James's plane go down told Bruce that the helicopter, or not the helicopter, told Bruce that the propellers had been shot off by an anti-aircraft shell, and then the plane caught fire. Just like how at home...
Were those dual engines or single?
They're dual, and they sit low to the ground. I remember that. The wing shape is like...
Does it have the bend?
Yeah, but it's a very sharp bend up.
Okay.
And then it goes out, so...
Cool.
Yeah. So...
Oh, it's the...
yeah, pretty much like...
I know...
Audible media.
Exactly, right? That's just what I was thinking.
You're fine.
We're doing a lot of hand movements over here. No one will understand.
That's okay. That's
okay. It's almost like a W shape.
Yeah. So the propellers get shot off of his plane before it goes down. Just like at home, he's breaking the propellers off of these planes that he's getting. And even up till now, Jason, it could all be
circumstantial.
Weird circumstantial. It can't be weird circumstantial. Just hear me out.
Okay.
Here.
All right. Why?
The
Tell
last.
Me why.
Piece in a very long line of evidence of pieces of evidence. Evidence of pieces. That would be a good band name, is what that would be.
You think almost any weird assortment of words that we say would be a good band name?
Yeah, assortment of words. That's a great band name.
Exactly.
The last piece in a long line of evidence here is that the Leiningers, they actually contacted a family member of James Houston. It was his 84-year-old sister, Anne. They set up a phone call between little James and Anne, and during the call, Anne didn't ask questions of little James, but rather James told Anne things about their life together, kind of in a, oh, remember this, remember that sort of thing. And it starts out simple, and it starts out potentially coincidental. James says that he would call Anne Annie. Fair.
That's normal. Yeah.
James says that James and Annie had a sister named Ruth. Okay. It's weird, but
Ruth is a little bit more of an odd name.
James says that James, Ruth, and Annie were all 4 years apart, with James being the youngest.
Okay.
All right. James says that their father was an alcoholic who smashed things when he got drunk and had to go to rehab later in life.
Oh, goody.
James says that Ruth wrote for a society column in the local paper, and when her mother was hired by one of the families she was profiling to be her maid, it caused the whole family a lot of strife and embarrassment and turmoil. James says that as children, James and Annie had matching portraits of them done by the same artist whose name was Daryl and gave them to their mother as a present. Do you know how many of those things he got correct?
I'm going to guess all of them.
100%.
Gosh, that's weird.
100%.
Gosh, that's
there
weird.
There is the difference between coincidence, red hair, blonde hair, and that.
We're able to fact check all of that.
Well, I mean, this whole thing is, there's a book written all about this.
Okay, that makes sense. And in the book,
Anne essentially says, this happened, and it's all true, 100%. And it actually got to the point where Anne so fully and completely believed that little James was her brother that she sent him James's old belongings. She said, these aren't mine. If you're here, these are yours. So she sends him this stuff from times in the army and in the military, and he opens the box, and the first thing he says is, this little frickin' four-year-old opens the box, sniffs it, and says, this smells just like the aircraft carrier did.
What?
Yeah.
Gosh. That four-year-old lived a hard life.
Yeah, seriously. And then there's some other weird kind of coincidental stuff as well. Like, both of the James were beautiful singers, even though their parents couldn't sing. The interesting thing is that the younger James, or the older James, didn't ever care about aircraft or airplanes until he was about two. And then he got obsessed with even older planes. And so the author of the article I wrote kind of posited, well, you know, is it possible that maybe it's just happening over and over and over? It's the same guy, and every time he's getting drawn to something with airplanes, you know. Now, the last thing about James is that he also had just a little bit to say about his life between lives. He says that he went up to heaven. That's actually where he met Billy, Leon, and Walter. Yep. So he met them there. That's why he named his toys after them. Just a coincidence, they all served on the same aircraft carrier together. And he also says that he chose his parents, and that he remembered watching them at a big pink hotel in Hawaii. And he said there, these are the people I want to be my parents. And about 5 weeks before the couple became pregnant with James, they were at the Royal Hawaiian Hotel in Hawaii, which is a big pink hotel.
Yeah, yeah. It's super famous.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I had no idea. Super famous. All right. Okay.
But James had never seen it, never known they'd gone there or anything like that at all. That's James.
Has these previous life influences continued through? Do we have any information about that?
I don't think so.
We don't know if they've dropped like they did with the twins.
Here's the difference, is the twins were like an oddity to their parents and their family members. James has been to Iwo Jima, and as a child, he threw a reef into the water where his plane went down. I don't know how that has affected him growing up.
That's so crazy.
And like, where he's at. But yeah, like a Japanese flew him out there to do that.
We're talking about someone that's just a few years younger than us, really.
Yeah, yeah, just.
It's crazy.
5 years younger than us.
Yeah, so he's 18
now. He's going to college. I wonder what he's going to college for. Oh, we need to follow up with this.
We need to track this kid down.
I'm going to try to do a little more research, and if I find anything notable, I'll bring it up on next week's episode.
That would be amazing.
I didn't even think to be like, I didn't even put that together, that he was only 18 right now. Anyway.
Crazy, right? So
that's James.
That's an awesome story. I like it a ton. It's makes you think, man.
Mm-hmm.
Makes you really, really think. And I've actually got one that has a little bit of the same stuff that both your stories have. A little bit.
Yeah, give it to me.
But this did not happen while Jeff was a child. This is actually happening, and he kind of realizes this experience and his reincarnated self at the age of 45.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Dang.
So my story is actually another well-noted and very famous one, that of Jeffrey Keane and his theory that he is a reincarnated Civil War veteran.
All right.
Civil War general, to be exact.
All right.
John Gordon.
John Gordon. Oh, I did. I did hear about this a little bit.
Yeah,
but so, I just glossed past it.
Totally. So it was first publicated in his book, Someone Else's Yesterday.
Okay.
And then also got picked up as a documentary, I believe, on A&E or Sci-Fi, something like that.
Okay.
And it's actually pretty cool, and there are some pretty interesting details as well. So as a heads up, again, at this point in his life, he's 45. He's also a retired firefighter, chief firefighter, which is pretty cool. Mm-hmm. But he visits the Battle of Antietam at Sharpsburg, Maryland, with his wife back in 91. While on the battlefield, he just gets overcome with grief and sadness and anger to the point where he becomes literally exhausted while they're just kind of standing there looking at it. And just this incredibly weird experience. So after they actually leave, he picks up a Civil War magazine that goes over historical facts about the Battle of Antietam and things like that. And he doesn't think much of it. They go home. About a year later, he actually starts thumbing through it, scanning some things, and then he comes across a really weird picture.
Okay.
It's weird because it's a picture of John Gordon, who looks indisputably just like Jeff.
You, as an impartial observer, say that they look exactly the same.
They look very, very similar.
Oh, that
like,
gets me so
I
turnt.
Would.
I'm so turnt right now.
It's to the point where I'd be like, is Jeff just not his aunt? Like, is they're not just like actual family member?
Yeah.
You know, like I could totally see them actually being related by blood. Like that's how close I could see it. Even down to the way they wear their facial hair.
Nice.
It's crazy. Nice. They both have goatees. And a long one too, which is really odd.
Yeah, not
and
something
so
you see in the 1990s.
He sees this image, and he freaks out a little bit. I mean, of course, why wouldn't you? And he goes and digs deeper. He investigates more about this John Gordon, and he found out that he was actually shot 3 times in the face during the Battle of Antietam.
Oh man!
And what's weird about it? Is that he got shot, it grazed, mostly grazing, right over his left temple.
Okay.
Right below his right cheek and also his jaw.
Nice.
And what was really interesting is the fact that Jeff has weird birthmarks in very, very similar locations.
Nice.
Including a really weird looking, almost star-shaped birthmark on his jaw, which is, from what he can find historically, the same scarification that came from a bullet wound that John received during the battle.
Oh, I'm so happy right now.
So, of course, naturally, he's starting down this rabbit hole.
Yeah, yeah.
And he's digging through as much Civil War information as he possibly can. Now, they're almost the exact same height. They have the same eye color. They write in a very similar manner. And they talk almost exactly the same from documentations that Gordon had written.
And
and all this is just kind of adding up for Jeffrey, and he truly believes that he is a reincarnated John. And it's from everything that it sounds like, it's a lot of the same. It's very, very
right.
Like it's hard to just push this away.
Right.
Even the way that they stand is very similar.
Yes.
Like they both stand arms crossed.
Yeah.
And after being interviewed, his firefighters that were under him mentioned that he, gave orders like a general.
Nice. Nice.
And so now it's just all this crazy amount of information and essentially duality between these two individuals are coming forth. And one of the things that is kind of like the nail in the coffin for me is John was 30 at the time of the Battle of Antietam.
Okay.
No, he didn't
die. Oh, he didn't die.
He didn't die during the battle. No.
I thought he died this entire time. Did you say that?
Nope. I just said he got shot 3 times in the face.
Okay. I mean...
And then I later mentioned scarification.
For thinking that getting shot 3 times in the face
meaning
kills
healed.
You.
Okay. So, I said grazing.
It's fine.
Grazing.
Right. Go ahead.
Phrasing with the grazing. Anyway, so another kind of odd thing is that Jeffrey looks back at his own past. And when he turned 30, he got this really weird pain in his jaw that he actually seeked medical attention for. And no doctor could find a source of the pain. Eventually, yes. It faded away.
Completely, 100%.
That's... crazy stuff. And I'm going to keep going. Sorry, yeah, there's a few more things. It's awesome because now Jeff is a Civil War historian for the most part. He has also done some really weird identification things as well. Like, he's been able to go into museums, and without prior knowledge, he would know, like, incorrect flags that were being used.
Oh, really?
For the time period and stuff like that. So,
holy crap.
Yeah, so some very interesting things occurred to Jeff. And all of this kind of catalyzed and came to fruition when he visited the battlefield.
Yeah.
Dang.
He realizes it. He didn't have these memories flooding back to him as a kid or anything. Nothing out of the blue. He was 45. And again, one thing that he did started to trigger all these other things and made him pursue deeper information about it, which is super cool. And now apparently he's been to like almost every battlefield south to north during the Civil War, and he's just a huge buff now, which is awesome.
That's amazing. That what you said about the pain in Jeffrey's jaw, the reason that I had glossed over his account and kind of seen a little bit about it, that was brought up in my research about James, and it's what they call an anniversary event, where on the same day or in the same year of a person's life, you have an unmistakable, like, weird thing like that. And it actually, I wasn't even going to bring it up, but with James Houston Jr., with James Houston Jr., he got shot down. The date of his death, I think, was May 3rd, like 1940-something. I don't remember all of it right now. But he got shot down on May 3rd. And with little James, his nightmares and all of that actually started for him in May of 2000.
Mm-hmm.
It was on May 3rd of 2000 that he started having these nightmares. And crazy. Yeah, it's insane. I wasn't even going to bring it up.
There was another story I wasn't going to bring up either, but seeing that we've
already
had.
Bring it up, man.
Yeah, so I remember a little bit of it. This young boy born in India claimed to have been a completely different person. And it was interesting because he constantly said that he wanted to be addressed as this previous name. And he gave very interesting information that literally you'd have to be connected, or you'd have to like actually have some sort of knowledge, previous knowledge of the place, because it was a pretty far distance between where the child was and where he claimed to have lived. And he also owned apparently a radio store as well.
Really?
And the child also gave his wife's name and their children's name, which is weird. And their parents, even though, again, this, like I said, this is happening in India, his parents even kind of dismissed it and thought it as crazy talk.
Yeah, just of fantasy.
They eventually pursue it. There is a radio store named after the guy.
Nice.
And he also, the child, said that he was murdered previously.
Nice.
There's weird birthmarks on one side of his head that is just kind of a small circle. Mm-hmm. And on the other side, it's kind of a star shape.
Nice.
Apparently. So, and then he gives information about his murderers in the previous life. He was shot in his car at the gate of his home by two rival businessmen. And he actually gives their exact names. And apparently, the police pursue them. And during interrogation, they do confess.
What?
I know. Crazy.
What? What?
So
what?
I didn't really think about bringing up I think the child's name is Titu, something along those lines. T-I-T-U. I didn't want to bring this up, but...
Holy crap, man.
I felt like it was
Why didn't you do that one? I mean... Not that Jeffrey wasn't a bad...
I chose Jeffrey's because his story has been well-documented.
More verifiable.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I felt like just bringing up this story at this time, simply because I'm not sure if it's a coincidence.
Right.
But all of our stories have the previous person experiencing some sort of tragic end.
Right.
Or extreme violence in some sort. So I don't know if that's kind of a connection
right.
to reincarnation in general, but I felt like it was enough of a coincidence that I should bring that up as well.
Totally. And there is so much documented evidence. These are only 3.5, we'll call that one a half story. 3.5 Side stories bit. Of especially kids. But if anybody is more interested in this, you should check out the work of a Dr. Ian Stevenson. He was like...
Didn't he just recently die?
He died in 2007. That's so 10 recent. Years ago. Yeah, recent enough. But he spent his entire... Well, not his entire. The majority of his professional life, he was a psychologist. And he spent the majority of his professional life interviewing and investigating stories of children recounting their past lives and verifying this and that. And I'm pretty sure that he was involved in James's story and he was a big part of that. It's amazing stuff. Just Google him and you'll find all sorts of work by him.
So before we continue yeah. into wrapping up and that kind of stuff, were you able to find many stories that were previous to 1800s? Because I found it rather difficult. Most of the accounts that I found were, for the most part, current. They're modern
right, both,
accounts. And I think that...
Both of the parties.
Yeah, and I think yeah. that is really just because we have a lot more information, a lot more documentation.
Right.
And oh, we yeah. can actually verify a lot more of the yeah. accounts that kids and also adults make.
I mean, if you're just like a peasant in the Middle Ages, there's absolutely no way to verify that.
Right.
There's just not.
Yeah, like
what I really enjoyed about that last story you shared about Jeffrey, not just the fact that like, oh, this guy looks a lot like me. This guy has the same, he got injured where I got injured, the anniversary event, all of that's compelling. But to me, it's those little differences because, or sorry, little similarities, like yeah. the way they spoke, the way they stood, the way they
And for me, I think also kind of another nail in the coffin is they, both John and Jeffrey served.
Yeah.
In some manner.
Yeah.
And led in some manner yeah. as well.
It's, and I think about if I was going to be identified because, yeah, Jeffrey looked like Gordon. James, it was said, kind of like he had the same nose structure, the same jaw, but it wasn't like they showed side by side pictures. It was not like I was walking down the street and be like, oh, that guy looks just like that guy. You right. really have to look for it. The way that you'd be identified, especially by members of family and all of that, beyond even just looking like somebody, which can just be a coincidence, is how you act, how you talk. Like, I do certain things that my wife...
Your characteristics, your mannerisms, yeah.
Yeah, my wife, if she saw somebody else doing these things after I died, I'm sure she would be like, oh, that's Sam?
What? It's like that scene in Mr. and Mrs. Smith, when Mr. Smith is peeing, and then she identifies that it's her husband.
I never
because
saw that
of the
movie.
Way he pees. Oh yeah, it's hilarious.
That's awesome. It is exactly like that.
It's those fine details.
Yeah.
That only I think someone truly close to you that would be able to really distinguish.
Yeah, but I mean, if the majority of these accounts happen when the kids are young, and by the time that they're 6 or 7, 5 or 6, I think is actually where it is, 5 or 6, they've forgotten about it. They're not going to develop those traits. You know, with Jeffrey, he has that. As a full-grown person who has written letters and been in command of other people and given orders,
like, right.
you can see it, but you're not going to see it. With
yeah, and for everything that I can tell, he didn't have that acute knowledge of that past life.
Right.
But it was more of a influence on his current.
Right, yeah. He didn't, because he didn't actually remember any
no,
of it. He just
no.
put it all together. As
Correct.
Opposed to having dreams and visions and things like that.
Right.
That is a really interesting case. I like that a lot.
Mm-hmm.
I'm glad you
so
did that.
I figured it was worthwhile to at least bring up. Now, tell me the logic behind reincarnation.
So, yeah, let's get into this. So let's get into the what the heck is going on here situation. You have a few different camps. And I'm not going to say that I'm representing all of them because I don't know. Because I care about what I care about and what
is,
I think is right.
Is one camp filled with RVs? I want to be at that one.
You probably.
Cool.
You get in it and drive away.
Dish?
Free Wi-Fi, Dish Network.
Be amazed.
We're sponsored by Dish.
No, we're not.
Apparently,
but
a lot
Dish,
of people.
If you'd like to,
yeah, seriously. Apparently, a lot of people think we did really good with our Vicks Vapor Rub. So,
thank you,
Vicks.
If you're out
it's
there,
your move. So, for me, we've got to look at reincarnation in one of really three ways. Two more real ways, but one kind of out there way. The first one is that it's happening exactly how the Eastern religions, and even not to be fair, even the non-Eastern religions, the ancient Greeks, the Gauls.
The cycle of life.
The cycle of life, that it happens exactly. And if you look at it in that way, we are officially, I want to say, dispensing. I think that you're okay to agree to this as well. Any sort of like, well, science says this, science says that thing. Because like you said at the beginning, this is not something we can explain with science. It's just not.
Yeah, I mean,
not at this point.
Well, the problem with science and the paranormal is that no one wants to fund that science. You know who wants to fund that science?
Bigelow wants to fund that science.
Discovery Channel.
That's true.
For freaking ghost hunters. And that's not real science.
No, it's not. So, but let's, can we agree to a suspension of scientific...
Totally. Like, I don't believe that science has put forth a good enough effort to make the observations required to have scientific theories on reincarnation and ghosts and spirits.
So, all right, then I'm going to launch into it.
Go for it.
Okay.
I feel like I covered all my bases there.
You brought up, rightfully so, that reincarnation, the belief in it, most likely gets its start from the natural cycles of human life and of life that we see around us in the natural world.
Right.
If the earth goes through seasons and is quote unquote reborn every spring, mm-hmm. if planting goes through seasons, if the moon, the sun, the stars, even the rotation of the Milky Way galaxy, although we've never seen a full cycle there, but we know it's happening. Why would human life and like the spiritual part of humanity be any different? Why would it be that everything else goes in a cycle, but humanity's soul stops? Obviously, our bodies continue to. But,
right, we decompose.
Yeah,
we become essentially elements.
Yep, and then that's used to form new humans and all of that, which is great. But why would the spiritual side of it stop if everything else is in constant motion? So that's the first camp.
I think, you know, when we take a second and stop there, I think it comes down to how we believe in our higher significance than everything else.
Right.
I think a lot of, and I'm not saying that spiritualism or religion is wrong in any way. What I'm getting at is that we are terrified of death.
Oh, yeah. 100.
Of course we are. It's built into us. It's part of survival. That's how we became such a dominant species. But it's also, I think, a bit of arrogance as well, thinking that there will be something after life because we are human.
We're so special, we deserve it, yeah.
Exactly. And I don't necessarily fit in that camp.
Right.
So I'm not necessarily saying that we aren't special.
Right.
But I don't think that would be an outlier
in
that
case.
Right,
so, but if you then look at, especially in that case, the more Eastern religions, how it's not just humans.
Right. There's a spirit in everything.
Yeah.
And I think when it comes down to that is, you know, energy is not created or destroyed.
Right.
It's transferred. So are we talking, is there a difference between what we consider scientifically energy and what could possibly like a spiritual energy? Mm-hmm. And that's where we don't know yet.
Right. Totally. You get also into, we had mentioned it a few weeks ago, you get into this idea, if we're going to go down that camp, well...
Which camp is that camp? What path are we following right
that
now?
That first camp is a literal reincarnation. The soul is put into a different body after death.
Okay.
And it goes through there. So the purposes for that, I think, would match up very well. You know, you're trying to do better. You're trying to be better. Or at least you're trying to get shifted out. You know, you're either bad and you're going to stay bad and you're going to stay on the low rungs of the karmic cycle forever, or you're going to finally ascend. So that makes sense. When you look at the mechanical side of it, the spiritual mechanics of it, you then get back into
It would make sense if there is like a grand lesson we're supposed to learn out of life.
Right. And that grand
reproduction.
Right. That grand lesson might just be how to be decent.
Okay.
How to be good. That's really what, in that case, that's really what I think it comes down to. Personally, I believe that is the purpose of life, is just how to be not crappy all the time, because that is humans' default position, is crappy all the time. But when you look at the spiritual mechanics of it, you have to say, okay, so what's happening here? Is consciousness and the soul formed by the brain, and then somehow it escapes the body, and then it goes through the ether and then gets reformed again? Or is consciousness non-local? Is consciousness instead...
Oh, no.
I know.
Oh, no.
I know.
We're going
we talked about it. Yes, we did before. Is consciousness somehow broadcast into the brain? And it's the same thing as a radio. Like, what makes more sense? That eventually one piece, one molecule was put in there, and suddenly the entire consciousness of the brain started, and we were able to be higher thinking beings? Or, like a radio, that last circuit was put in and the radio was just turned on and it tapped into something.
Why wouldn't
we
be able to find those waves then? Like, what frequency is that on? Because radio waves, that is on a frequency.
So you have these parts in the brain that aren't very well understood called microtubules. And these are real things.
Okay.
And these microtubules vibrate, essentially. So kind of the idea is that again, not an actual
Everything vibrates.
Right, but more so than just the normal gray matter of your brain.
Okay, so it vibrates at a higher frequency?
I wouldn't say it's a higher frequency, but more power, more energy. Okay. So the theory, again, the consciousness most likely is not something on the electromagnetic spectrum that we can, like, monitor and all of that, like radio waves. But the theory is that consciousness comes in, is received by those microtubules, and distributed throughout the brain. And I'm not going to say that I'm smart enough to have read all of these books, and there are actually a lot of studies about it. But that's that theory there. And if we're looking at reincarnation in that first camp, I'll say that that's, in my opinion, the most likely scenario.
I think that's making a lot of assumptions.
Oh, it totally is. It totally is. But what other way? We're just sitting here theorizing.
Yeah.
What other way would you think that consciousness could be transferred like that?
Oh, I don't think it can be transferred.
Right. So that's what I'm saying is
I think consciousness gets formed by stimulus from the outside and emotional attachment to it.
Right.
That's how I think consciousness gets formed.
So, but then how?
Because at very, very young ages, like babies and infants,
right,
they do not think in eyes.
Right.
They don't identify with self. That grows in time.
Right.
Essentially, they're like an animal.
Yeah, of course. tiny little drunk dogs.
Yeah, exactly. Pooping and vomiting everywhere.
It's the miracle of life.
So for me, consciousness is something that grows. Consciousness is not something that just gets implemented and switched on.
Right.
Consciousness is kind of like man's technology anyway.
Right.
Like, we build from what we previously know. I feel like consciousness stacks up just like that as well.
So what I'm saying then is, if we're going to sit back and say, like, give me just your theory. How would James, how would Jeffrey have gone through these things?
How would James know that? A spiritual energy transfer?
How would that... That's what I'm saying. It's not necessarily... Well, personally, I think that non-local consciousness makes a bit of sense to me. Not saying that that's definitely what it is, but in this case of that first camp of actual spiritual reincarnation, how else would that happen, would you think?
Okay, so to take a pause and kind of look back at the stories we've already spoken about today... there is actually none of them have essentially had a death, and then within that same year or almost immediately, we have a rebirth, essentially.
Right, right. It's not an immediate thing.
And the Gaul Druids had it down to believing that there was exactly a fixed amount of time before your warrior spirit gets reincarnated, rebirthed into a new individual.
Like a period of days or months or
seconds.
Yeah,
like I didn't find out the exact amount of time, but there would be a gap. It's not something that instantly kind of rotates over.
Right.
So if...
Okay.
If reincarnation is a legitimate thing, and if it is a period before you get reincarnated, what I think would kind of occur is essentially a calming I feel like your soul has to go through essentially a stabilization in
like a detox.
Yeah, like a neutraling.
Okay.
Before you can be placed into a new body.
Okay. But how does it get
there? How does it get there?
Yeah.
God, I don't know.
Okay, that's like, fine. That is totally a
higher level of spiritualism that
we just don't know. Idea. Totally.
And it's complete speculation.
Yeah, it is 100%. So that's camp number one.
Oh my gosh, we're going to more camps, Sam? Yes,
we have two more. This one.
Man, did you make a reservation?
Yes.
Okay, good. Do they have hookups for my RV?
Yes. Perfect. They do. Pull over. That's camp number one when it comes to reincarnation. Literal, actual, the spirit is taken from one body and put in another. The second is more of a, do you know Carl Jung?
Should I?
He was a philosopher. He was a philosopher. But he was a, what's the word? He was a psychoanalyst, just like Sigmund Freud. But he was a more spiritually kind of guided guy. He was a guy who would like take mushrooms and be like, what is happening to me?
Okay, so he poisoned his brain to hallucinate. Got it.
That. But he's still, I mean, his archetypes are like, they're seen in like Batman. The Scarecrow archetype is something that is in pop culture that goes all the way back to Jung. He is exactly the same, just because he took substances, he's exactly the same level of respect, even more so in the modern day than Freud. And he focused a lot more on like the spiritual unconscious and all of that. And he put forth this idea of the collective unconscious, which is basically the unconsciousness of all inhabitants of Earth. I make him sound like he's a really spacey guy. He wasn't. He was a really scientifically minded, well-respected individual. But the collective unconscious is this idea that we all in the universe draw from a collective pool when it comes to consciousness, and therefore there is overlap. It's not that these it's the same sort of thing.
So it's like the hard drive being wiped all the way,
kind of. It's kind of like, have you ever heard the stories of people, and there's a lot of them, and who's to say how much is true and how much is false, but of people who the night before 9/11 had a dream of towers going down and planes crashing and things like that?
No.
There's a lot. There's hundreds or thousands. So in the collective unconscious way, it would be that we know that something's about to happen.
Did they actually document it on September 10th?
No, they didn't. Well, because it was the dreams. So they fall asleep on September 10th, woke up to September 11th.
So more like quantum string theory?
Yes. Yeah. Entanglement.
Yeah.
In its own way. So you do. You have, in that mindset, the fact that the entire collective psyche knew that something was about to happen, and it bubbled up and bubbled up and broke through into these specific individuals.
Kind of like how birds know when natural disasters are about to hit.
Yeah.
That kind of a thing.
Exactly. So the idea would be with the collective unconscious that because James Houston Jr. was an individual who had a life and all of that, that is seeped into the collective unconscious and was picked up by little James. Not that there was actually a connection between the two, other than a psychic one in its own way, or a mental one. So that's camp number two. Camp number three.
Oh gosh. Okay.
Where's this camp at? This camp is in your nightmares.
Oh good.
Camp number three. It's all a simulation. It's literally the same programs being executed.
Sam.
It's the same programs being executed. You write a code. That code dies over here. You're a lazy programmer, and you copy and paste it over here, and so on forever.
And if there's anything we learn, programmers are lazy.
That's true.
That's why there's all the shortcuts.
Hello, programmer fans. I'm sure we have at least one. So there's got to be someone somewhere. So that one is different from the first one. It is a literal taking of that personality and putting it elsewhere, but there is no higher purpose other than potentially, if you look at it in a certain coding kind of way, debugging, essentially. You run the code, you run the code, you run the code. Finally, it becomes the perfect code, and you are no longer a jerk, and you're what our grand architects want. You are a good person, which is what they want.
Perfect AI.
Exactly. So Do you want to hear my simulated reality story?
No.
Okay. You don't have to.
I don't need to, Sam. You're going to keep me up at night.
I'm going to tell you. So earlier today, I'm driving along.
Yeah.
I'm driving along with Katie. We're going to Barnes & Noble.
This is like deja vu. What is this?
Okay. This was weird. This was really, really weird. So we're driving along, and Katie and I, the only music that we both like is oldies, and so we listen to the oldies station whenever we're driving. So we turn it on, we change it from the Christian station, which is what she likes to listen to the oldies station, and in my head, I'm not hearing.
So are you like 1950s oldies?
Yeah, okay. Like up through some of them in like 70s and 80s.
Okay.
But what I'm hearing or processing in my mind is that song Cruel to Be Kind. Have you heard that song? It's cruel to be kind in the right measure. Cruel to be kind.
No. I probably have, but...
So that's what I think I'm hearing. But then after a second, I'm like, wait, this isn't that song at all. What the heck? And then I listen, and it's some song that I've never heard before in my entire life.
Does it have the same four chords that every other popular song?
No, it is completely different. Okay. There is, like, it was weird because there was absolutely nothing similar, but I thought there was, and I swore that I heard it. That song ends, and the next song is the Cruel to Be Kind song, and I just turned it off, and I was like, what the heck is happening here? To me, that's enough proof that this is a simulated reality. That's how close to coming unhinged I am right now.
That is... Wow, dude.
That's weird.
I mean, if I listened to my radio station and I was humming it to my head and it came on next, I'd be like, wow, my radio station literally plays the same four songs.
That's fair. But it's not. It's the oldies. I mean, I hardly ever hear the same songs there. I wish I did.
I mean, is it like, so I know like back home, I used to listen to like 104.1, The Hawk. And
if The Hawk is listening, call us.
Or not. Anyway, it was literally a classic rock station, and they never played the same song twice. Is your oldies channel the same way, or
pretty much? Okay. I mean, there are a few. Because the other weird thing is that there are classic songs that I really like anything on the Guardians of the Galaxy.
It feels like though that The Hawk played the same 20 songs.
Right, I bet there are ones that I really like that they come on, and I'm like, yes, I love this song. Come and get your love. Hooked on a feeling.
Hey, hey, hey.
Especially Come and Get Your Love. Whenever it's on, I'm like, oh, I love this song. I don't even like Cruel to Be Kind. I don't enjoy that song. And I haven't heard it for at least a few months. I think my father-in-law played it one time. It was bizarre. There was no reason for me to think of it in the first place. There was no reason for me to think it was the same song. And then it was on.
You're like, positive there is no exterior influence that made you
100%
subconsciously connect to that song.
I can't say because it's my subconscious, but as far as I can tell, there is absolutely no link. I don't even know what the other song was. I'd never heard it before, but I thought that that's what it was. So for me, and I've also had times like one other time where this happened a few months ago. This guy was walking along outside, and Katie and I both heard it. We were in here. They're out there. I mean, you're sitting here right now. You just heard a car go by. It's muffled. Like, the car is outside, not inside. This guy is walking by with a radio playing, and it is literally like it's coming from right here in the room.
You guys didn't have any windows open.
We had no windows open. We checked because we were like, what the heck is going on here? So the universe is definitely not real. But when I said that to Katie earlier today, she rightfully said, what does it matter?
It does matter.
It doesn't matter.
I'm a real person.
You are a real person.
I'm a real boy.
Even if you're a simulation, you're a real person.
And see, that's going back to the whole, I think highly of myself.
That you are egotistical.
Exactly.
To the last. I like it.
Just like mankind in general.
There we go. You got any theories, anything you want to say?
I mean, I think I said what I needed to say.
You said your piece.
I did.
I like it.
And again, reincarnation is something that it's a tale as old as time. It's as old as human ancestry can go back.
That's fair. That's totally fair.
And
therefore, maybe it's part of our collective unconscious.
Deeply rooted in ourselves. It still makes an impact.
All right. I can dig it.
That's all I got to say, man.
It's crazy stuff.
It's
these stories were seriously amazing.
Yeah, they were. Like, they're quite incredible.
They were unreal. So
absolutely
cool.
And Sam, do you have anything we need to share?
I do.
Okay.
So what I do want to do though is give a plug, if you will, to a show that I literally just discovered. I think it was this last week, maybe the week before, that I am just loving, and I really think our listeners are going to enjoy it as well. It's called the What If Podcast, and it is fantastic. So their episodes are all What If blank. So they did one. The first one I heard was like, What If You Never Came Home? And it was about these people who went out on a journey and disappeared just mysteriously. And they talk about that case. Then I listened to What If Humans Never Stopped Evolving? What If You Lived Forever?
You think we've stopped evolving?
Well, never stopped evolving in like the from single-celled bacteria to humans there. And they talk about as well.
I mean, evolution takes a very long time.
I know. But they talk about how even with that evolution taking a long time, we're not at the point where we're growing. I mean, humans have been the same sort of genetic type. We've been the bipedal, four limbs, hair, arms.
Well, yeah, that's just because we don't need really much else to survive right. anymore. We've created the perfect habitat for ourselves.
Right, and they get into all of that. They're so smart. But that's the question is, what if there was some new challenge, or what if there was some new form? What if this isn't even our final form to take?
Okay, Frieza.
Frieza. So you're there Frieza, was that I'm one. Cooler. The next one I listened to was like, what if you found something strange? And it's about these tiles that are just, the first part was about these tiles placed around the cities, just full of paranoid ramblings, and people don't know where they came from. Like there are some in Chicago.
That sounds like Sith holocrons.
What?
I don't know. Sith holocrons are like
pyramid shapes. Oh, yeah, I know what a holocron is. I thought you said Sith Hawkman.
Sick. Sith Hawkman.
Sick Hawkman.
Tony Hawk's final form.
Nice. Nice. That was good.
Thanks.
Yeah, it's just there's like 50 or so episodes. They're amazing. They're amazing. People say I don't do that as much anymore.
You
so.
Don't.
There,
the joy has been me, taken from you.
I wonder what took it.
Hopefully me.
That's the point.
In science.
Let me do this then. They're amazing.
Yes.
That's not even me doing it. That's how you perceive me doing it. Let me get back to my original state. They're amazing. No, that wasn't good. And just not science.
It's like,
it goes
it's
up.
It's amazing.
And then it goes down. It's amazing.
There you go.
There we go. Good.
That it's back.
Me. I'm back. It's amazing. All
see,
right.
That should be the ringtone.
I don't want that. I don't want that at all. Yeah, so check them out. We'll link to them in the show notes. It's the What If Podcast. Fantastic. And then we got a few new reviews this week. Not a whole lot, but you know what? That's fine with us. I think we got like 4 new ratings. We only had 2 reviews left. They're both 5 stars. I love them both. I'm gonna actually read them both because they're pretty short. The first one is by Patrick from Portlandia. He says, great podcast that is very interesting. Very interesting topics discussed in detail with some great sound quality. Thank you,
what?
Patrick.
Crazy.
Right? It's like I work at this.
With everything I shake my leg with.
And then the next one says, great show by Ryan K404. Says, love the content and the hosts are great. Great thing to listen to while working.
At least so, I keep my face in front of the mic most of the time now.
You do now.
Yeah.
You didn't
I know.
Before. It was truly, truly awful.
I'm growing, Sam. I'm learning.
You are. We all are. So thank you both.
Absolutely.
That's so nice. And then we have here, let me check this. That's from Saturday. That's from Friday. Cool. And then we got 3 new patrons. So we would like to thank Dre Funk.
Yay, Dre!
We'd like to thank Taylor Stark.
Yay, Taylor!
And we'd like to thank Zazzy Bell.
Yeah, Zazzy Bell.
That's amazing.
It's 2 words.
Oh, really?
Zazzy Bell. Yeah, that's, it's dope.
It's super amazing.
Guys,
it's everything.
It's amazing. Guys, thank you for your support. It means the world to us that we can take your donations, use it to buy. I just bought a book about Sasquatch today. For an interview that we've got coming up in a next month.
I finally convinced Sam to let me buy a book about science.
It goes against every part of my soul, but I'm gonna, it's fine. It's our, it's shared, it's podcast money.
Exactly. Just, progressing the show.
It makes me sad. All right.
It makes me so excited.
Good. I want you to be happy. Let me think.
You heard it here first, people. Sam wants me to be happy.
Only sometimes. And guys, if you want to follow us on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, you know where we are. It's Instagram, Not Alone Podcast, Facebook, Not Alone Pod, Twitter, Not Alone Pod. Take a look at our Patreon if that's something that interests you, sponsoring the show. You get some nice bonus content and all that, but really it just comes down to you enjoy what we do and you want to keep it going. So, and then like us, review us on iTunes. You can't like us on iTunes. Review us on iTunes. Subscribe. Remember to like and share and subscribe. Comment. I'm just going down. I'm becoming horrible. A YouTuber now is what I'm doing. All right.
I was like, whoa, this looks familiar.
I don't want this. All right. I did it last week.
Remember, whether you're shooting down Tonys over the Pacific or choosing your toy that you've had for generations, you are
not alone.